For correct time all the time, wear a Bulova. Bulova presents the Dolly Madison, fashion leader for 1939. 21 jewels at better jewelers everywhere. Maxwell House Coffee presents good news of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee present 60 minutes of star-studded entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Join us as we greet your host for this evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Ted, and good evening, everybody. Tonight, heading our guest list will be Clark Gable and Lionel Barrymore, who will appear with Miss Rita Johnson in a powerful drama, A Free Soul. Also, Reddy Willen and Rare Nicole, Fanny Bryce with Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson with his augmented orchestra. And as an added feature, tonight we will MGM stirring musical drama, The Great Waltz. We open the program with an enchanting Johann Strauss melody from the picture, featuring the voice of one of its stars, the charming Milica Coryus. Ladies and gentlemen, the Fledermaus or the Bat.
That was really wonderful.
Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Fanny Bryce as that lovable little rascal, Baby Snooks. Tonight, Daddy, played by Hammy Stafford, is all set for a good time. He is to be best man at the wedding of a very dear friend. Snooks is busy with her homework as Mother and Daddy are dressing to attend the ceremony. Here they are.
Here comes the bride. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mother, when you get a chance, I want you to help me with this white tie.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. Finished with your housework?
Uh-huh. Where are you going?
Well, I'm taking Mother to a wedding.
Are you and Mommy going to get married?
Oh, don't be silly, child. One of my friends is getting married.
Why?
Now, don't start asking a lot of idiotic questions. I'm dressing and I'm in an awful hurry.
All right. Daddy.
Yes?
Who's getting married?
I told you. A dear friend of mine. And stop making those silly faces.
You're doing it.
Well, I'm trying to get this confounded bow tie on.
Why?
Because it's a formal wedding, and I have to wear a white tie and tails. Well, what are you laughing at?
Where are you going to pin the tail, Daddy?
I'm not going to pin any tail anywhere. Now, leave me alone and let me get this horrible tie fixed.
Take it off, Daddy.
I can't take it off. I told you all I'm allowed to wear at this wedding is a white tie.
Is that all you're going to wear?
Yes.
No panties?
No. Can't you see I'm struggling to get dressed? Now, be a good girl and leave me alone for 10 minutes.
I won't bother you no more, Daddy.
Well, all right. Sit quietly. Oh, who invented these things anyhow? Snooks!
Huh?
Stop making those ugly faces.
I like it, Daddy.
Well, I don't like it.
Why?
Because if you make an ugly face like that, it'll freeze and stay the rest of the way all your life.
Daddy, is that what happened to Uncle Lloyd?
Yes. No. Oh, now leave this room at once.
All right. Daddy!
Oh, what is it now?
I want to ask you something.
All right, what is it?
Why do people get married?
Oh, because all men need wives and all women need husbands.
Why?
Well, just look at your Aunt Martha. She never married and she's very unhappy. Heaven only knows why. Now, let me dress.
Will I have to get married when I grow up?
Yes.
If I don't get married, will I be like Aunt Martha?
Yes.
And if I do get married, will I have a husband like Uncle Lloyd?
I suppose so.
Ah!
What are you yelling about?
I don't want to grow up.
Oh, stop that nonsense. You've got plenty of time to worry about getting a husband.
I don't want no husband.
Now you've changed your mind. Every woman wants a husband. Now leave me alone.
All right. Daddy!
Now look here, Snooks. I have no time to waste answering your silly questions.
Then tell me why people get married.
Because they love one another.
Is that why you married Mommy?
Yes.
Did you love her?
Oh, yes, very much.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Let me finish dressing.
Now, tell me about you and Mommy.
Well, we were very much in love. When we first got married, I was quite poor.
Was you, Daddy?
Yes, we couldn't afford a maid like we have now. I even used to help your mother with the housework, Snooks. Yes, indeed. Many times I cleaned the dishes with it. I polished the furniture with it. Why, I'd even wash the windows with it.
Did you mop up the floor with it?
Well, I'll tell you about it some other time. Now, I finally got this tie straight. How does it look?
It's very pretty, Daddy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the old boy isn't so hard to look at it that. When I get my full dress suit on, I'll look pretty dapper, pretty dapper. What are you laughing at?
You ain't gonna wear one of those, is you, Daddy?
Of course I am.
I thought only babies wore them.
Full dress suit?
No, dapper.
Oh, stop that silly talk. Now, where is my dress suit?
Don't wear it, Daddy.
Why not?
I don't think you won't like it.
Oh, nonsense. Now, let's see. Mother said it was hanging in this closet. Oh, here it is. Well, it looks kind of... Oh! Good heavens! Oh!
I think I better go now.
No! Don't you leave this room.
Oh.
Who cut this great big hole in my dress trousers?
Maybe the Mort's done it, Daddy.
Marcy! Marcy!
And did the moth paint these yellow stripes all over my dress coat?
Uh-huh.
And I guess the moth cut this wrist broom through my top hat.
Yeah, I think.
And I'm positive the moth cut these sleeves off at the... through my top hat.
Yeah, I think.
And I'm positive the moth cut these sleeves off at the elbow.
Ain't those moths terrible, Daddy?
Snooks, why did you do this?
I didn't do it, Daddy.
Oh, don't lie to me. You know you did it. Now, you tell me the truth before I whip you.
I was dressing up for Halloween.
With my dress suit. Oh, Snooks, just look at it. The whole thing's ruined. The coat, the pants, the top hat.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't even go to the wedding. And I have you to thank for it.
You're welcome, Daddy.
Oh, what's the use? Well, it doesn't do any good to spank you. But this is the worst you've ever done. Oh, don't you see, Snooks? You're making me a sick man.
I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, I'm sure of one thing. You've done everything to my clothes a wicked child could possibly do. Well, what are you laughing at?
Why do you see your shoes?
Oh, you little...
And now, Meredith and the orchestra give you their conception of how A Tisket, A Tasket would have sounded had it been composed by Johann Strauss. Do you mind if I sing along, Meredith?
Pray do.
Okay, maestro. One, two, three. One, two, three. One, two, three. A Tisket, A Tasket, a brown and yellow basket. I sent a letter to my mommy, and on the way I dropped it. I dropped it, I dropped it. Yes, on the way I dropped it. And if she does not bring it back, I think that I shall die. Now, as it might have been written by Richard Wagner, with vocal interpolations in the manner of Fred Waring. Waring. And his Pennsylvanians Glee Club. Questions the wives listening in. I wonder how long it's been since your husband put down his coffee cup, leaned back, smiled all over, and said, "That's the best cup of coffee I ever had in my life." The best cup of coffee he ever had in his life. Well, who is there listening who wouldn't love to hear her husband say that? Well, in the opinion of thousands of men the country over,
The new Maxwell House coffee has given them the best cup of coffee they ever had. Men who thought the old Maxwell House blend of the world's choice coffee superb now marvel at its new richness, its new deliciousness, the wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup. We believe that your husband, too, will find extra pleasure, extra satisfaction in the new Maxwell House. The reason we say this is because it's been improved in two ways. First, the famous Maxwell House blend has been still further enriched. Not only is it richer, more pleasantly stimulating, but it's smoother, mellower by far than any coffee you've probably ever tasted before. And the second improvement in the new Maxwell House is due to the radiant roast process. This differs from the old ways of roasting in that its radiant heat penetrates clear through each coffee bean. It eliminates any chance of under-roasting on the inside or for parching on the outside. So it gives you more of the true flavor of these choice coffees. There's no chance of weak coffee due to under-roasting, no chance of bitter coffee due to parching. This new Maxwell House comes in the same familiar blue can, the famous Super Vacuum can, which keeps it not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. So tomorrow, ask your grocer for a pound of Maxwell House coffee. It's selling at low prices, friendly to your budget. Now's the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Thank you, Ted. And now, ladies and gentlemen, another Johann Strauss melody from the new motion picture, The Great Waltz, which Melissa Coria sings for us. One Day When We Were Young. That was beautiful, Miss Corius, and thank you, Meredith. Well,
thank you, Bob.
What a commotion. What goings on?
Frank
here?
Morgan.
Meredith, are all your musicians savages?
Why, what's the matter, Frankie?
Well, that bassoon player of yours, I believe he's the bassoon player. Ugly fellow with no forehead and very high eyebrows.
That might be any of the boys.
It sounds like my bassoon player, all right.
Yes, well, he's a very... He's a very primitive fellow. A few minutes ago, he caught, or he thought he caught, some unfortunate chap exchanging confidences with his attractive wife. And he chased the poor man up 5 flights of stairs to the roof.
Good heavens, Frank. How did you get down?
Well, I ducked into the side... Now, listen here. Young, none of your innuendos. I'm getting pretty sick of you fellas running down my character.
Excuse me, Frank. There's a newspaper man outside wants to see you. He's been buzzing around for the past 15 minutes.
What paper is he from?
The Los Angeles Bee.
Yeah, I suppose someone told you that was a honey. Well, you'd better stick to your coffee, my merchandising friend. Ask the gentleman to wait.
Yes.
Well, the press is beginning to fawn on me, Bob. I thought they'd soon be coming to heel.
Yes, but I'm surprised you admit it.
A cheap quip from a melodious stable boy. I fancy you're a mad success with your fellow grooms.
Yeah, get back to the main subject, Wackadoa.
Well, I was remarking on the paucity of newspaper space my campaign's been receiving. Unusual for the gentleman of the press to let down a colleague.
A colleague?
Yes.
Have you got the audacity to stand here and try to tell me you've been a newspaper man, Mr. Morgan?
Front page Frankie with a Floy Floy. Two-column Morgan, they called me in the old days, Bob. Who covered the Chicago fire like a blanket? Morgan. Who covered the Johnstown flood like an umbrella? Morgan. Who writes this horrible material? Morgan. It's a lie!
Listen, Wanad, get off the front page a minute. I want to make a bet with you.
A bet?
You heard me. I've got $5 that says you were never on a newspaper in your life.
Oh, that's like taking candy from an urchin. Put up the money and I'll hold it.
Well, I'll hold my half. Now start talking.
Well, when I...
Wait
was...
a minute.
What?
Before you start, you might like to know I've been a reporter myself. And I've worked on darn near every paper in the country.
Well, that is... I'd better see the man from the Bee. He probably wants an interview.
No. Come here, you thief. What about your newspaper career?
Yes, well, tell me, Bob, did you ever work on the old New York World in the days of its prime?
Yes, sir.
You did?
Yes.
That was a fine paper. Well, you should have worked on the old Louisville Courier in the days of...
Mars Henry Watterson? I was there.
You was there. Well, the time... Bob, did you ever work on the old New York Herald under James Gordon Bennett?
No.
Oh, there was a paper. If he worked on that one, he's a bigger liar than I am.
Well, I'll check on that later. Was that your first job, Frank, with the Herald?
No, I started in the Midwest as a lowly cub, salary a paltry $250 a week.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Who ever heard of a cub getting $250 a week?
Well, I was one of the Chicago Cubs. Then I went to work for James Gordon Bennett, and I knew I was headed for the heights. Sure enough, my opportunity soon came.
I suppose he sent you to Africa to find Livingston.
No, Jack Benny found her. Doing all right, too.
Why, you ignorant tramp. The rescue of Dr. Livingston was the greatest newspaper exploit of the century.
A piddling piece of picayunish publicity. How do you like that? Tongue twisters, and I don't see the stuff till I go on.
Keep talking, Crumbola.
Well, I'll tell you a story of journalistic enterprise that will chill the blood of any man that ever peeped through a keyhole. And I do mean you. By the way, young, who wears your clean shirt? Where was I?
In my laundry bag.
Oh, yes. Well, this is the story that made me famous.
Oh, I suppose you won the Pulitzer Prize with it.
Just the first two letters.
P-U... Go ahead.
It was Christmas in the Herald office. All the reporters had gone home but me. I was sitting quietly at my desk reading The Life of Horace Greeley when suddenly the phone rang. I was instantly galvanized into action. I said, hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
Bob Young.
Get off the wire. A voice at the other end informed me that the madcap daughter of New York's richest and most powerful banker had eloped with a garbage can. I mean, of a garbage man.
What a story.
Yes. I dashed out to the banker's mansion, hastily disguised myself as a butcher, and was admitted at the tradesman's entrance.
Well, how'd you work the butcher disguise, Frank?
I pulled out my shirt tails, grabbed a lamb chop from the watchdog, and borrowed a straw hat from a passerby.
A straw hat? Christmas Day?
The man was an eccentric. Once I was in the kitchen, I bribed the scullery maid for a picture of the heiress, and with 5 minutes of shrewd investigation, I ascertained that she had indeed eloped, disguised in her father's clothes.
Any other reporters around?
No, Bob, it was a clean scoop. I tore back to my office, composing a terrific caption for the picture on my way.
What was the caption?
Fleas in father's pants. Well, sir, when I got back, what do you think I found?
What?
No printers.
No printers?
They'd all gone home. It was time for quick decision. And I knew Bennett would promote me for it. I dashed to the composing room, wrote my story in type, and set a headline over it in 88-point Gothic, upper and lower case.
What size cap?
6 7/8.
Can I sell you a derby?
Never wear.
Thank you.
Not at all. Well, I ripped out a dull war story from the front page, replaced it with my scoop, and started the presses rolling. The sweat poured from my face as I ripped the finished copies from the press. 1,000 at a time.
Single-handed?
Yes, sir. And not only that, but I folded them, bundled them, wired them, dumped them, and sold 1,000,000 copies myself before 2 a.m. Watchfree! Watchfree! What do you read there?
Frank, Frank, I don't believe a word of that.
Why not?
Why, because if it's true, that story would have made you the biggest man in the newspaper business.
It almost did, Bob. I had that whole elopement story cold, except for a couple of trifling inaccuracies.
Oh, namely?
Well, in the first place, it wasn't a garbage man. It was the girl's uncle. And it wasn't her father's clothes. It was her mother's. And they weren't eloping. They were going to a masquerade.
Was it a girl?
No, it was her brother. The bank has sued for $10 million and collected. You can send me the $5, Bob. I've got to go out and see the man from the B.
Yeah.
I've
got to... Goodbye. Well, Ted, the time has come again for that friendly moment of relaxation.
Yes, sir, you're right, Bob. It's time for our old custom. A moment of relaxation with a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee. So we're inviting all of our friends everywhere to join us in a delicious cup of this coffee that buoys you up and never lets you down. And with the new Maxwell House, you'll find that cup of coffee more delicious than ever. You'll notice a smoothness and mellowness that'll satisfy you, we believe, beyond any coffee you've ever tasted before.
All right, Meredith, if you pour the music, we'll pour the coffee.
We now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
This is Bob Young again, and we continue our good news of 1939 with more glorious music from the stirring MGM musical drama, The Great Waltz, featuring the golden voice of Miss Milica Coryus. Now Maxwell House brings you the MGM Theater of the Air, where Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's famous producer-director, Mr. Edgar Selwyn, presents Clark Gable, Lionel Barrymore, and Rita Johnson in the drama, A Free Soul. Music, please, Meredith. And here are Miss Johnson, Mr. Gable, and Mr. Barrymore.
A Free Soul is the story of a man from the wrong side of the railroad tracks and a girl who was born with a silver spoon in her mouth. Jan Ash has been brought up by her father, the brilliant lawyer Stephen Ash. He's taught her to live by his own code, which is to consider himself a free soul, not bound by ordinary morals or conventions. Jan believes in this code, lives by it. But what happens when this beautiful girl, this free soul, meets Ace Wilfong, played by Clark Gable, a man who has hoisted himself by sheer strength from the gutter to his present notorious leadership in the gang world? We'll see their meeting now. Ace is on trial for his life. Stephen Ash, played by Lionel Barrymore, is defending him. Things look pretty bad for Ace, but when he joins his attorney at the counsel table, he looks cool and unruffled. He looks with interest at his lawyer's daughter, Jan Ash, played by Rita Johnson.
Sit down, Ace. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Ash.
Am I in the way, Dad?
No, darling. Mr. Wilfong, this is my daughter.
How do you do?
Miss Ash, you should get some new pictures for the press.
Oh? Should I?
They sure don't flatter you any.
You're on trial for your life, aren't you?
Yeah.
Aren't you nervous?
Me? Sure. Is blue your favorite color?
Why?
Well, I was thinking it ought to be.
Well, I'll admit it, it is.
Say, listen here, Ace. There's a lot of your gang scattered around the courtroom. I thought they were going to stay out of this.
Last day, I guess they think they came to say goodbye.
Now, there's an element called judicial notice has a lot to do with trials like this. All the district attorney has to do is to tell the jury there are a dozen of your men around with guns.
Get hold of Slouch Biggins. He'll round them up and clear them out.
All right, then. Sit down. Mac, get Slouch and take care of that.
Yeah, Mac, tell him to bring me a blue necktie right away.
Yes, sir.
Now, listen. There's nothing standing up in the prosecution's case but the fact that three people saw you without your hat. But how that does stand up. Do you remember exactly what you answered when they asked you about it being found beside the body?
I said I had nothing to say. Didn't know.
Something you haven't told me that might help me out?
I wish I could, sir.
You're holding out, aren't you?
Mr. Ash, a guy like me has to ride with Lady Luck. A squealer leaves his pals in plenty of trouble.
Will you go to the chair silent?
You're defending an innocent man, sir. Now, that's all I can say.
Oh, it's wonderful, but it's darn silly.
Ace, your whole case depends on that hat. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Here's your blue tie, Ace.
Thanks, Mac.
Hey, you might pay a little attention to me. This is no time to be changing your necktie.
Well, I had a hunch I'd like to wear your daughter's colors today. Do you mind, Miss Ace?
I'm thrilled to death. It's not quite straight. Let me fix it.
Oh, thanks.
I wish you luck.
I guess I'll need it.
Ace, in a few minutes, I'll address the jury. I may decide to pull a rabbit out of that hat, and when I do, don't look surprised.
I never look surprised. It's no good in my business either.
Gentlemen of the jury, I'm not here to frustrate justice, but to help you see that justice is done. If my client is guilty of murder, I want him punished. But if he's not, then I want to keep from your kind hearts the terrible responsibility of not doing the right thing about it. This hat, my friends, Your Honor, was found beside the murdered man. And my client was seen leaving the building bareheaded. Well, it's been proven. I admit it. Now, here are the initials. A.W. Well, it might be Arnold Williams, Adam Wright, Angus Woolley. It might also be Ace Wilfong. But this hat is the case for the prosecution, ladies and gentlemen. Will the defendant stand up, please?
Yes, sir.
Will you place this hat on your head?
Yes, sir.
It's needless to call to your attention, but the hat is at least three sizes too small. The defense rests.
Stephen Ash has done it again, and Ace Wilfong is free. That night, the aristocratic Ash family is gathered at a dinner in honor of the mother of the clan. But Stephen, who's been drinking heavily, celebrates his victory so thoroughly that he doesn't get home until his mother's dinner's over. And to make matters worse, he brings with him his notorious client, Ace Wilfong. The Blue Blood Ash family is shocked. All but Jan, who resents the family's attitude, finally leaves the house with Ace in his car. An hour later, they stop at a roadside restaurant.
Just happen to remember I've had no dinner.
Me either. The air was so thick at the family table, I didn't have much appetite.
You know, they have great hamburgers here with onions.
Fine. Make it two.
Two hamburgers. Plenty of onions.
I must say, the ride shook me a little.
Yeah, I should think it might have. Why'd you keep hollering for speed?
Haven't the least idea.
Maybe you figured I couldn't talk much at 100 miles an hour, huh?
Didn't you want to demolish my family an hour ago?
It was a little below the belt.
And weren't you frightened stiff going into that courtroom this morning?
When I met you, I knew my luck was in.
You're the only really exciting man I've ever met.
Look out! Lie on the floor!
What is it?
Some of the boys must think your father fooled the jury. This is my personal relaxing room. Like it?
Very nice. Very nice indeed.
I was afraid I wasn't going to see it again.
Well, now that we're here, would you mind explaining what all the shooting was about?
Oh, that's a rival outfit. In fact, the same lovely people tried to frame me in this murder case. As soon as your father won it, I was afraid the boys might be after me.
They'll try it again, won't they?
Yeah, they'll cool off in a couple of weeks.
You're amazing.
Yeah?
Life or death, insult, taboo, all the same, no change.
Poker face. You have to learn it. Sit down.
Thanks. What's in there?
Gambling rooms. But nobody comes out here unless I say so.
Including me?
Including you. Brighton?
I love it. This is one day that hasn't been like any other day. You're a new kind of man.
Well, sometime when you know me better, I'll tell you how I feel about you.
One day has uncovered a lot. I know your secrets.
There's one you don't know.
I like secrets told.
Yesterday, you were a million miles away. And now, here you are.
With a very unusual name.
Jan. Come here.
That'll be all. Please.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't offend you for the world.
I'm not offended. I don't know what's happened to me. Whether it's just the end of a perfect day or what it is.
Jan. I think you better go home now.
In the next 6 months, Ace Wilfong and Jan Ash meet often. Stephen Ash, drinking more heavily than ever, knows nothing of their romance. But one day, Ash gets a call from Wilfong, who asks him to stop in at the gambling rooms in the evening. Ash arrives, slightly intoxicated.
Well, Ace, here's to the happiest spot I've struck in a dog's age.
I'm glad you like it, Mr. Ash. Are they treating you all right?
Never better. Fine. Hey, why didn't you tell me about this this place, huh?
Nice to have you here. Have a drink with me, Counselor.
I'll have one with everyone in the house.
That's all right with me. Anything you like.
Say, this place must be a gold mine. If you've called me for another case, it'll cost you $10,000.
No, nope, no trouble of that kind.
Well, you wanted to see me, didn't you?
Oh, it'll keep. Look around. Enjoy yourself.
Well, you better tell me now. I don't like to be interrupted when I'm gambling.
Well, it's not easy cold like this.
Oh, let's have it. Let's have it.
It's about your daughter.
Jan? Well, what about her?
Why, I want to marry her.
What did you say? What was that?
What's the matter with that?
What's the matter with it? The only time I hate democracy is when one of you mongrels forget where you belong. A few illegal dollars and a clean shirt and you move across the railroad track. Jed, have your boy bring me some drinks and don't insult your guests.
Mr. Ash, I don't know anybody else who could say that to me and get away with it. And you better not say it again, either. Boy, bring the gentleman all the drinks he wants. I'm going to my rooms. Yeah.
Hello, darling. I'm later than I thought I'd be. Have you missed me?
Hey, have I? You know, I'd love to open that door and see you here like this. It makes me wonder what the devil I'd do if you stopped coming around.
What would you do?
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that.
Ace, you seem so serious. You really want to talk?
I want to marry you.
Why?
Why? Well, why do you think why? I'm off my nut about you. You know I am.
Well, why make so much fuss about it?
You know, there's something about you. I mean, there's some part of you that's taking it on the run for me all the time.
Don't be silly. I take it on the run right into your arms, don't I?
Yeah, just the same as your father does for Booth.
Ace, you're the one person in the world who shouldn't speak unkindly of my father.
None of your friends know anything about me, do they? You don't tell anybody anything, do you?
No, of course not. It's my own business.
Hey, you're not shooting over my head, Jan. I got you figured pretty well. We're never seen together anyplace. But from now on, it's going to be different. You're crazy about me, and you've got to go all the way through. Why can't you marry me?
No ways, darling. I'm head over heels mad about you. You know I am. What's in the future, I don't know.
I'm telling you.
No, you're not. Nobody is. Marrying you is serious, very serious. It's the end of a lot of things for me. My world would close up on me in a minute.
Why worry about them, a lot of high-hat chiselers?
Oh, wait.
Hey,
no,
cut that, Jan. Get me cut it. It's not a laughing matter.
It's cut. Put your arms around me.
Oh.
That's better. Oh, maybe you're my sweetheart from the other end of the world, and maybe you're rank poison. Tomorrow we'll look into a crystal ball for what's ahead, hmm?
All right, all right. And who's doing the talking now?
That night, Ace Wilfong's place is raided. As the police arrive, Ace's henchmen, knowing the boss wouldn't want Stephen Ash's name mixed up in any scandal, break open the private door of Ace's apartment and push Ash into the room. He sees Jan and is instantly shocked into sobriety. He takes his daughter home without a word, but as soon as they reach their hotel room, a violent argument begins.
Ace Wilfong isn't good enough, Jan, even if you think you're in love with him.
Dad, yesterday you won your first case in 5 months. There's only one reason why you lost the others. Now, I haven't criticized a priest, and I haven't let anybody else do it.
Oh, that's not fair, Jan. You know it isn't. I've lived most of my life in great anxiety, terrific strain and excitement. I have to drink as I have to breathe. You know I do.
I think my reasons are better than yours. Ace Wilfong is the only man in the world I care anything about.
Oh, Jan, darling, this isn't love. Believe me, I've seen a lot. I know it isn't. Why, have you ever married him in 6 months?
I never thought of marrying him until now.
Oh, Jan, my baby. Now, I'm afraid things have caught up with us. I've done you great, awful harm. But when I think of you and this mongrel...
Please. Dad.
Well, I'm sorry, but when I think of it, it's just complete eclipse. There's nothing left, that's all. Nothing. That's how much I love you, and that's what I've done to you. God help me.
Dad, I have a suggestion. Because I really love you better than anything else on earth. Another year like the last for you is just the end of everything. I didn't realize it till this minute.
Well, Jan?
I'll make a bargain with you. I can't go on and have you blame yourself like this, and I can't see you lose what a brilliant life has piled up.
A bargain, you say?
If you'll quit drinking, I won't see Ace anymore.
Oh, no, you should do it without any bargaining.
Well, I wouldn't think of it, Dad.
Well, I'm afraid I couldn't promise.
I'm giving up what's in my blood just as much, every bit.
Well, I'll try, Jan.
We'll bury ourselves for 6 months in the hills, and it has to begin right now. If you'll never take another drink, I'll never see Ace again. Never.
All right, baby. I'll try. All right, Jan. All right, dear.
So Jan and her father go away to the hills, and his regeneration starts. But the habit of years is too much for him. And though he fights it, he gradually gives way to temptation. One day, Jan discovers him drinking. Ash, horrified and with shame and remorse, runs away, takes a train back to the city, where he really starts to drink himself into a stupor. He's in bad shape when Ace Wilfong happens to walk into the cheap saloon.
Ash. Ash!
What do you want? Get away from me.
Bartender.
Yeah?
How long has this man been here?
2 days. He slept here last night.
He's in pretty bad shape. Bring me some ice right away. Then call the doctor at the clinic and tell him that Ace Wilfong wants him over here right away.
Ace Wilfong?
You heard me. Now hurry. How is he, doctor?
He'll be all right, I think. Just about got him in time.
Good. Send the bill to me.
Whatever you say. This where he lives?
Yes. Will he sleep now?
I think so. But he might wake up and want to talk. Somebody ought to be with him.
I'll stick till somebody shows up. So long, Doctor.
Goodbye.
Give me a drink.
Well, not for a while yet. How do you feel?
Terrible. Did you bring me here?
Yeah.
Where's Jan?
How should I know? I haven't seen her in 3 months. thanks to you.
Oh, I can't face her. I made a bargain with
bargain.
Her. Bargain? Yes. I promised to stay off the booze.
Oh, I get it. And you made her promise not to see me. Was that the deal?
Oh, she'll be looking for me. She'll loathe the sight of me.
You'll be all right. But if she's coming here, I better breathe.
No, 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 no. Don't go. I've got to talk to you. I've got to convince
her. Now, if it's about Jan, it's no dice. I've thought about her every hour since she was gone. She's the only thing in the world that means 2 cents to me.
Now, you've got to listen to me. If you really love her as much as you say, you'll want to do the thing that will make her happy.
All right. All right. Go ahead and talk. I'm listening.
From the depths of his heart, Stephen Ash makes a plea for his daughter's happiness, more dramatic than any speech he's ever made to a hostile jury. And finally, he persuades Ace, through his very love for Jan, that he must deliberately kill her love. Ash, satisfied, falls asleep. But Ace, steeling himself for the sacrifice he must make, waits for Jan to arrive.
Ace, what are you doing here?
I brought your father home.
Oh, where is he?
In there, asleep.
He's been drinking. Is he all right?
He will be.
Oh, Ace. It's so wonderful to see you again. Well, aren't you glad to see me at all?
Well, why should I be? You ran out on me, didn't you?
I've come back.
Well, with me, they don't come back.
You're still angry with me, aren't you?
No.
Yes, you are, and I can't blame you. I shouldn't have run away. Forgive me, Ace.
All right, all right. Take your hands off.
Kiss me.
Say, what's the matter with you? Are you dumb? When a guy gets tired of a dame, there's nothing you can do. We're through, you understand? We had our fun, and that's all there is to it.
Is that all there ever was to it?
Certainly. You thought I loved you, didn't you? Well, I didn't, and I don't.
Then why did you wait for
me? So I could tell you. So you could get it straight, you understand?
Hmm. You're not a very good liar, Ace.
And what makes you think I'm lying?
Because I know you love me just as I love you.
Do you keep away from me?
Darling. Darling.
Yeah.
Well, out of the way, Jan. So this is how you keep your word, is it, you swine?
Hey! Oh. Why did you do it, Father?
He promised me he'd...
Shut up.
He's still alive.
Yeah. And mongrels are hard to kill.
Please, darling. You tried to make me hate you, didn't you? But you couldn't.
Jan! Jan, call a doctor!
Oh, never mind the doctor. I got a slug in the belly. No chance.
Oh.
Don't worry. Better this way.
Ace. Ace, don't die.
Counselor. Counselor. How are you going to beat this rat?
I wouldn't want to beat it if I could.
Get a hold of a slouch. He'll show you how to make it a... suicide. Goodbye, Jan.
Oh.
So long, Counselor. And don't leave your hat here. It might fit you.
Congratulations, Miss Johnson, Mr. Barrymore, and Mr. Gable. The MGM Theater of the Air will have to go some to top those performances. And now Meredith Wilson and his orchestra with one of the leading dance hits of the hour, What Goes On Here in My Heart.
Thank you.
Nice going, Meredith. That's a fine tune. But you know the number Miss Corius did a little while ago? That's for me. That's the kind of stuff I like. That one day when we were young, one morning in May. Kind of reminds me of something. I guess all songs remind people of different things. Say, remember one night in June, two alone, dark eyes?
Dark eyes? I had them for 2 weeks. She told me her husband was out of town.
Frank, I'm talking about the song Dark Eyes. You know, it goes like, Hachachonia, Hachastrasnia, Hachachonia.
Why, Bob, you have a voice like a bird.
Thank you.
Crow. My boy, why don't you leave the singing to real singers?
Frank Morgan, I suppose.
Well, may I compliment you on your excellent choice. It's not so much the quality of my voice, Bob, but the beautiful expression I use in my singing. The schmaltz. I put so much feeling in my songs. Well, you should hear me sing Love Thy Neighbor. You'd swear Hedy Lamarr lived next door.
All right, genius, you sing Love Thy Neighbor, but give me that one day when we were young, one day in May. Isn't it terrific?
Yes, it's sensational in a hokey-pokey sort of a way.
Hokey-pokey? It only happens to be one of Johann Strauss's finest compositions.
Well, that's only one man's opinion.
One man's opinion? What do you know about music, anyway?
Look here, my unethical young icky. Do you realize you're addressing F. Schubert Morgan?
So what?
No doubt you've heard of the Unfinished Symphony. Well, I finished it.
Oh, is that an old joke?
Yes, well, what was good enough for Schubert is good enough for me. Say, that reminds me, I have to get some tickets for the symphony concert tonight at the Hollywood Bowl. I'm campaigning for votes among the higher type of musicians. Peasants.
What are they playing at the bowl, Frank?
Oregon State, and I hope we beat them. Oh, you mean the music. Yes, it's going to be the Schubert Concerto No. 7, Opus No. 2, Movement 3, Molto, Appassionato, Agitato, Con Brio Moderato, Tacit.
What does that mean?
Swing it, Gate.
Frank, I think that underneath it all, you're just a jitterbug.
Bob, you know there's a lot of hullabaloo about that jitterbug stuff, but it's nothing new. Why, in our family, we've been bugs for years.
You're telling me.
Seriously, Bob, swing music is nothing but the old-style ragtime with the instruments out of tune. Why, back in the old days of vaudeville, we used to play the same stuff. We were playing the low circuit, and I had a little jam combination known as Morgan's Angostura Bitterbugs. Three pieces, piano, kettle drums, and riveting machine. Believe me, we were killer dillers when we got in the groove and started to collar the jive.
You mean you were solid senders, hep cats?
Yay, man! Shoot the sarsaparilla to me, John boy! Of course, we didn't do those silly songs like Flatfoot Floogie with a mulberry bush. We did songs that had sensible words. Songs with real sentiment. Beautiful lyrics. Remember?
Eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa, swing, babe. Eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa, swing, babe. Gather up the honeydew, the Michigan glide. Side to the side, dance of the bride. Eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa, go, babe. Eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa, oh, babe. Gaze into my glimmers when you're ragging with me and be my eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa-rag, baby. I'll be your hullabaloo kalapa-dapa, and in the spring you'll be my flag-a-da-doodle-a-hop-a-dapa, and I'll buy a ring, and someday when we get married we'll have the cutest little wiggly-waggly-faggly-daggly-dee. If you say that, you will be my hullabaloo kalapa-dapa-dee.
Eepa-dapa-dilpa-dapa-go, babe. Eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa-oh, babe.
Gaze into my glimmers when you're ragging with me and be my eepa-sapa-dilpa-dapa-rag, baby.
Eepa-dapa, hullabaloo something, and fine lyrics. Pick it up from here, Ted Pearson.
Every wife listening in who would like to find out how to serve her husband a better cup of coffee will be interested in this letter from Mrs. Ivan Dearborn of 1626 38th Avenue, Oakland, California. Since becoming a listener of your Maxwell House program, we have also become avid users of your grand coffee.
My husband was a crank on coffee, often refused to drink it until I started using Maxwell House. It truly is a man's coffee. Thank you for a fine product and a very splendid radio program. Mrs. Dearborn's husband was a crank about coffee. I imagine all men are more or less cranks on the same subject. Mrs. Dearborn found the simplest way to please her husband was to serve Maxwell House. Now, if your husband likes coffee that's richer in body, smoother, more mellow, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup, may I urge you to try the new improved Maxwell House? You see, this already superb blend of the world's choice coffees has now been even further enriched. And then a new method of roasting called Radiant Roast brings out even more the rich, delicious flavor of these superb coffees. And of course, please remember the new Maxwell House comes in two correct grinds. Now, if you use the drip method of making coffee, the special drip grind Maxwell House will give you coffee uniformly rich and clear in every type of drip or glass coffee maker. Then, for perfect results by the percolator or boiled method, you'll choose the regular grind Maxwell House. So tomorrow, ask your grocer for a pound of the new and improved Maxwell House coffee. I think you'll agree that now more than ever, this is the coffee that's good to the last drop. In honor of the great waltz, Meredith brings to the concert hall melodies from the pen of the waltz king, Johann Strauss, featuring the lovely voice of Milica Coryus, assisted by his augmented chorus and orchestra. week, ladies and gentlemen.
Excuse me, Bob, but there's a very distinguished gentleman outside to see you.
Well, tell him to come in, Ted.
All right.
Next week, another star-studded hour of entertainment. Another bigger and better good news program. Your regular favorites will all be here, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson. In addition, those two sensational singing youngsters, Betty James and Douglas McPhail. And finally, as a special added attraction, we will have as a guest Frank Morgan's distinguished brother, that illustrious actor and terrific ping-pong player, Ralph Morgan.
Thank you very much, Bob. Ralph Morgan, are you the distinguished gentleman Pearson told me about?
Don't be silly. I dropped him, Bob, just to ask a favor of you.
Pray do.
Well, don't look now, Bob, but is Frank here?
No, he's gone home.
Well, Bob, this is a favor. Don't tell Frank that I'm going to be here next week. Keep it, Mom, will you?
Oh, my lips are sealed. Ladies and gentlemen, that should give you an inkling of what may go on here next week. Be on hand and tell your friends about it.
And here's good news. In the next few days, MGM will release to the motion picture theaters of America the new 1939 stirring musical romance, The Great Waltz, starring Louise Reiner and Fernand Gravet, and introducing the magnificent voice of Milica Coryus. Prominent in the cast are Hugh Herbert and Lionel Atwill, with hundreds of other players. The Great Waltz is a treasure of the beloved melodies of Johann Strauss. Friends, you will be thrilled when you see The Great Waltz.
And believe me, folks, Ted Pearson is right. The Great Waltz is really great entertainment. This is Bob Young saying good night. See you next Thursday, and in the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you.
This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is KFI Los Angeles. Cold? Keep warm in a Beckman fur coat, jacket, or scarf. Guaranteed quality and savings. Special weekend discounts, small deposits.